This is a physical book, 19X1X, December 1958 through April 1959. Having difficulty in deciding how to freeze the gels for the autoradiographs. It was necessary to freeze the gels because if you just stained them and tried to detect the iron was no longer bound to the transferrin. So it had to be done with a frozen gel or with a non-frozen gel. The frozen is obviously better. And the freezing gels, the second page of this book, says the best way yet is to have a metal plate polished and lower the gel down gently without bubbles and lower it in fairly slowly, about 20 seconds from A with the metal downward. Worked perfectly on three tests. So I was feeling better about that. The Monday, December 22nd, 23rd, very interesting. This is my first entry that I remember of a sample from Werner Kallo. Tests on choline esterase, typical and atypical genes, because Werner Kallo was the first person to find what we now have many examples of pharmacogenetics, where some individuals respond strangely to different pharmaceuticals. In this case, this was an inhibitor of choline esterase, which was used to inactivate the diaphragm for surgery of various types. Of course, the patient would be on artificial respiration, and it was usually temporary, and that respiration would return after the choline esterase broke down the anesthetic, which was a choline ester. But Werner Kallo found that there were some individuals who responded by or who did not recover from the anaesthetic until much longer time period, quite frightening. And these were the first examples of individuals who had genetic differences different pharmaceuticals, as I was saying. And so this is typical and atypical choline esterase genes versus haptoglobin and transferrin genes. And they were over to Werner Kallo for choline esterase. And I was, in other words, I was testing some of my transferrin variants and some of my haptoglobin variants to see if they looked different from as far as choline esterase was concerned. So it was Bob Crawford, for example, a straightforward CC and type 1-1 haptoglobin, and a 2-1 and a 2-1 modified and a 2-2 with different transferrin types. And I tested in the opposite direction. I tested some sera from Werner Kallo sera, of whether they were presumed homozygote choline esterase AA, heterozygote TA, and normal choline esterase TT. So TT was the normal choline esterase, and AA was the homozygote for the abnormal choline esterase. The apparent degree of poorness is a comment on the left-hand side of this page, very poor, extremely poor, poor, and then fairly poor and okay, fairly poor, okay. No, but the conclusion is there's no clear choline ester rate difference, but the samples are too poor to be sure. I don't. The my samples, Bob Crawford, etc., Len Jacobs, are all show usual choline esterase only. But his samples were rather poor samples, I think, at that point. Some frozen gels, December 29th, the first gel, 2 hours in the deep freeze, etc., etc. High voltage, Tuesday, Wednesday, December 31st, rabbit serum. With a rather obscure graph. Rabbit samples on Tuesday, Wednesday, January 7th. A couple of samples looked rather messy. Ah, at last, here's the autoradiograph that I was looking for. Wednesday, Thursday, January 7th, 8th. Transferrin types from ELO Giblet. And that was a whole range of them. CC, Mrs. McKenzie, B1C, B. Granum, B2C, Helen Maguire, CD1, IK769, CD2, Alberta Levis, and CD3, Alice Smith. It says I took 0.3 mils of 3% hemoglobin and added 0.3 mils of Fe59 from before, etc., etc. And the gel was on for radiography at 12 and off at 1 a.m. Repeated on Monday, January 12th, 13th. And there's a beautiful gel images and autoradiographs, which were eventually published. The protein stain on the left and the Fe59 autoradiograph on the right, showing absolutely unequivocally what the transferrin band, what the variations were in the transferrin. That was used in a publication with ELO. Very beautiful result, Wednesday, Thursday, January 17th. Testing other things than benzene on January 8th, hemoglobin, haptoglobin stains, benzidine, and ortho dianisidine. Just stability. And with the comment on the following page that dianisidine is very poor, and benzidine, as usual, very good. And clearly benzidine is much better. Therefore abandon orthodianisidine and continue with benzidine tests to get the benzidine better. the hemoglobin tests, the following page, trying to get rid of a problem of the gels gassing. So for example, 2% hydrogen peroxide, very much gassing and fades greatly. And by the time I got to 0.2% hydrogen peroxide, no gassing and no fading and double underlining, 0.1% ditto. But these gels were had not been precipitated with 50-50-10, and so it's, there's a comment, 50-50-10, less good by a factor of about 5. Some confirmation of a different gel, Giblet CD subscript 2 is equivalent to the old D and now called CD subscript 1. Giblet's B is subscript 2 in parentheses, C is equal to the old BC and now called B subscript 2 C. The notation had to be changed a little bit. Benzidine stains on the on January 11. Working out technique all the time. Oh, Tuesday, Wednesday, January 13, 14, looking for the pregnancy zone. a bunch of tests with 1159 Mrs. Velma Lowe, November 13th, 58, haptoglobin 1-1, and that sample was 2 AIDS, get a new sample from Nancy Simpson, IV and IV plus hemoglobin. And I think I'll pause there for a moment to find the reference to the pregnancy zone. I recently found an old publication, alpha-2 macroglobulin and pregnancy zone protein. Alpha-2 macroglobulin is the one that I used to call and frequently called slow alpha-2, and the pregnancy zone protein was had referred to earlier in our account, and it's a large review about 50 pages long. Alpha-2 macroglobulin in the pregnancy zone protein by Klaus Munk Peterson. Published in the Danish Medical Bulletin, November 1993, I think. It's not too well reproduced in my copy of it. But it starts off by talking, when it talks about the pregnancy zone, my description of it in the Advances of Protein Chemistry, Volume 4. Their reference, his reference, there's 63. My reference is Advances of Protein Chemistry, not Volume 4, Volume 14, 1959. And it was in the Danish Medical Bulletin. It's rather interesting to look at it. Very detailed account of those proteins. So going on, this is January 13th, 14th, Tuesday, Wednesday, as I mentioned, pregnancy zone experiments. They're quite easy to see in More in the samples that are in good shape. More autoradiography on Wednesday, Thursday. That was Wednesday, Thursday, January 15th, 14th, 15th. Another one from Harry Harris, and nice to see these letters from old friends. Harry Harris, CD3, in parenthesis CD1, versus Elu Giblet, CD3, CD1, Albert Levis, etc. And then here is the letter from Harry. Say, dear Oliver, many thanks for your letter, etc. We're pleased that you would join us in the paper, and we're quite happy to wait till you have finished your review, because I'm still writing that review for Protein Advances of Protein Chemistry. Harry included four samples and some pictures of his three-dimensional gel, and the paper that they had already published. Harry, Elizabeth Robson, and I think it was Marcelo Siniscalco. I think it's Marcelo, I almost forgotten. So they got a copy of their paper and a copy of the gel that I ran, which is a good gel. With the conclusion, thus Harris's CD1 is equivalent to the old CD, and Giblet's CD subscript 1 must now be turned CD0, and Harris's CD3 is Giblet's. So they were, it got more and more complicated as more types were found. And there was a three-dimensional gel sketched by Harry. More gels checking on various people. There are no particular comments about them. Just a routine continuing, getting more and more samples and more gels. Each page with a large gel with several samples on it. Checks again, large checks, Monday, February 16th, rechecking on multiple gels, on gels with multiple samples, that's to say. Monday, February 23rd to Tuesday 24th, gel to check BC versus CC, 2-1 versus 2-1 modified, and a typical gel with a little floating insert talking about Mrs. Jess Montgomery, Mrs. Harry Thomas, etc. Just a little sketch of a little piece of paper. It's clear on Wednesday, Thursday, February 26th, I have a gel there that's labelled with cerule or plasmin. I don't know what made me know that that was ceruloplasmin, but it's a benzidine stain, and I think there must be some cross-reactivity. That benzidine can give a positive reaction with ceruloplasmin. This is a sample from a 2-1 modified that has that label on it. And this, since they are clearly stained, they obviously have their hemoglobin, haptoglobin stains. Their protein stain gel is there as well. Working on this usual type of thing. I think I'm trying to understand the best way to get a contact between gels of different solutions of different concentration. The gel being the usual gel, pretty usual 0.025 molar boric acid, 40% neutralized with sodium hydroxide, and then various concentrations, 0.5 molar and 0.025 molar. A gel with lithium, sodium and potassium. Not at all clear what I was thinking about in this, but no. presumably they... not clear. Worrying about shrinkage of gels at the negative slot surface is the motivation. Continue with this on March 4. The ends of the gels in contact with filter paper with buffer in it were always a little bit of a problem. They would contact would either shrink the gel or fragment it, and was never completely satisfactory, but it was usable. I'm trying to get an elution, preparative electrophoresis on March 5th or thereabouts, with a gel and a cross flow at the bottom of the gel, one drop per 10 minutes, and a lot of breakage, very much gel breakage on the outflow, something wrong. Remake all the solutions and repeat it on Monday, March 16th, cross flow, etc. Obviously giving me trouble and not very understood. Still worrying about gel breakage with different solutions. Um, trying to understand whether it was the cation or the anion that was giving the trouble, with a comment that all the exits are indistinguishable, frozen and some breakage, and all the entries are indistinguishable and perfect. When a gel had an ordinary borate gel had potassium fluoride, potassium chloride, potassium bromide, potassium iodide, and then this suggests, as before, that the cation is the responsible ion, because all of them were the same when the anion was varied. Fluoride, chloride, bromide, iodide made no difference. And so this is checking it at March 19th with gels with lithium, sodium, potassium, and cesium. And they're all swollen in 30 minutes. Still not getting anything very convincing. Friday, March 20th, accurate standardization of sodium borate exit concentration. So that's point 0.025 gel 40% neutralized with inserts of 20% sodium hydroxide solutions, 0.4, 0.3, 0.2, 0.1 molar. To look for gel breakdown. Tuesday, March 24th, show some sketches of what the sort of problem was with the fragmented gel and the constricted gel. Here, Wednesday, Thursday, March 25th, a regular vertical air cool gel, trying to look for ceruloplasmin, apparently. It's on the left hand side, it says ceruloplasmin detection. So benzidine without hydrogen peroxide is a good ceruloplasmin reagent. You don't need to have hydrogen peroxide to check the ceruloplasmin. No, I don't think it's that. It has to be. No, it's plus hydrogen peroxide, minus hydrogen peroxide. A test with hydrogen peroxide and phenylene diamine and benzidine reagent with and without hydrogen peroxide, and a check mark indicating positive with phenylene diamine without hydrogen peroxide, and a check mark meaning correct benzidine without hydrogen peroxide. The images, there are two photographs One is presumably, although it isn't labelled, is presumably just a higher exposure than the other. But the ceruloplasmin bands are easy to see. So it's Emily Atwood with and without hemoglobin, and Emily, and the various tests that the ceruloplasmin shows in the gels that don't have any hemoglobin. But the hemoglobin, haptoglobin, is very clear when, of course, when there's hemoglobin there. So it was possible to detect ceruloplasmin in the gels and where it migrated. On Thursday, March 26th, still this gel shrinkage. Gels inspected 12 hours later. And the final comment is that thus the three cations, which are sodium, potassium and lithium, are very similar. Sodium is so little different from lithium as not to be worth changing at present. Use 0.18 molar for entry and exit. Just picking the concentration. Monday, Tuesday, March 31st, a ceruloplasmin experiment. All the same in ceruloplasmin, and also checked with esterase, and the same for both. One image is an image of the esterase result, and the other is an image of the ceruloplasmin, and they're all the same in both. Still messing around with ceruloplasmin detection on Monday, Tuesday, March 30th, 31st, testing four reagents, and the images are on the following page. All four reagents are adequate with sufficient time, and the four reagents are being there. Usual benzidine reagent and pH 4.7 acetate buffer saturated with benzidine, etc. pH 5.7 benzidine and pH 5.7 paraphenyl diamine. All four reagents are adequate with sufficient time, but the pH 4.7 benzidine is the fastest and most intense, so it became a stain for ceruloplasmin. I don't remember ever publishing it, but maybe I did somewhere. Dr. Walker gave me some samples that were somewhat interesting. Tuesday, Wednesday, April 28th, because these twins have respectively all girls and all boys, hence the interest. But I doubt if it meant anything as far as our haptoglobins or transferrins were concerned. Going on with fluorescent fat dyes. And trying an inhibitor, a new idea to suppress aqueous fluorescence with thiocyanate. Good with ER conch, I must have got this from some other place, that idea. And there is comments on what happened on the next few pages. Uvitex, U, for example, completely soluble in water, partly soluble in toluene. This is what Sieber said, is a comment, these fluorescent dyes for lipoproteins. Evidently not very happy with it. Thursday, April 2nd, abandoned, all negative. Trichloroacetic acid, fat trial. Gels run with trichloroacetic acid and fat. Tests with amido black and with oil blue N and OBN and azo BN, etc. Some more haptoglobin tests around about April 10th or thereabouts to try to localize haptoglobin zones for preparative purposes. Trying to migrate a dye through the protein solution to see if it's stained on the way. With a comment that amido black and brome phenol blue migrating and crossing a hemoglobin, crossing a haptoglobin type 2-2 serum. The dye passed the haptoglobins but did not stain them. So dissociable in alkaline solution, I said. With a gel that looks perfectly straightforward. Beginning to try to dissociate the haptoglobin into from the polymers. April 14th, this is probably the beginning, or maybe not the beginning, but another test trying to think about how to get the two polymers to break up into something simpler. And so April 14th is labeled HP tests with benzoate, and which is supposed to be a good dissociating agent. But I got the usual 2-2 pattern. Yeah, so decided to repeat SS reduction in 8 molar urea. So beginning to think about getting that critical step in working out what the haptoglobin polymers really were. And the next page is a fairly important gel, though it's quite ugly. Alkali tests of 0.05 molar sodium hydroxide with a comment of the breakdown and smear, and 0.01 molar sodium hydroxide, considerable but incomplete breakdown and smear, and the 0.002 molar sodium hydroxide, usual pattern, and 0.001. So take one on the left. I'm saying take one drop of haptoglobin solutions. This is with purified haptoglobin, I should have said, not with serum. Take one drop of haptoglobin solutions and one drop of 0.05 molar sodium hydroxide. Leave for 30 minutes and apply via starch grains thereafter. And it says the results suggest splitting and differences, but there's a sketch which shows the usual 1-1 pattern. It looks to me the sketch it does, but the gel but the photographs show that the haptoglobin polymers have been destroyed. So in the presence of sodium hydroxide, at least a higher concentrations, the haptoglobin is degraded into something that migrates not as multiple bands in the usual way, but calls it a breakdown and smear is a proper description of it. And then urea and SS experiment on the following page. Gels made with thioglycolic acid and 8 molar urea. Molal urea is underlined, and the result is very clear that the splitting has occurred, that 8 molar urea in the presence of thioglycolic acid breaks down the polymers and gives a different pattern in the 1-1 and the 2-1 and the 2-2. The 2-2 gives two bands, and the 1-1 gives a single band, and the 2-1 gives the single band with a fainter 2-2, but the polymers have gone. And during the gel preparation, there's a note that pink color was formed, suggesting some oxidizing groups in the starch. But there is no question at all that by having 8 molar urea and the reducing agent thioglycolic acid, the polymers have gone. The results are quite clear, and it was the beginning of my beginning to understand the nature of the polymers. Although the next day is a return to fat dye experiments. And a repeat of the alkaline tests on Wednesday, April 15th, 16th. 1-1, 2-1 and 2-2. With the various amounts of sodium hydroxide and water, alkali and water, and very clear breakdown of the haptoglobins into complex and smeary patterns. Just sodium hydroxide was not a good dissociating reagent in the sense of giving something that was easy to understand. The patterns were, with the haptoglobin 1-1, were difficult to understand, and with 2-1 and 2-2 also, though there are faint, smeary differences, it was not very satisfactory. repeating urea and thiazolic acid on April 15th, 16th. Poor result. Possibly the gel is oxidizing. Witness pink in the presence of thiazolic acid and smeared zones. So the zones are very smeary and spread out all over the place. urea and that was with sodium hydroxide, but urea and thioglycolic acid is again beginning to give something that's a little bit clearer. So this was probably April 16th or thereabouts. It's clear that the haptoglobins are in fact dissociated into something that migrates faster than the 1-1, even when the sample is at 2-1 or 2-2. And this result, which we'll probably see in the next book, was eventually published in a SIBO symposium or something of that sort. I'll check to see where the publication was. And this is the end of book 19.